Our next speaker is Rafael. He's going to introduce himself and his topic right now. So a big round of applause.
Thank you all for coming. My name is Rafael Gomez. I work at Octobus. We're a small consulting company specialized on Mercurial. I'm going to talk about how we use Python and Rust together in this big old project. When I say old, it's like an old code base. And what were the pain points and how we fixed some of them. So as a recap for people who don't know what Mercurial is, there are a few of them. It's a version control system, same generation as Git. It actually was made in the same month of April 2005 by a kernel developer. It's written mostly in Python. It has a decent chunk of C extensions for mainly for speed. It handles huge repositories for companies like Facebook and Mozilla, for example, with millions of files and revisions. And it has a very interesting and powerful extension system, which I have very little time to talk about, so maybe I'll have like a few snippets. It's very cool. Check it out on your own. But we're here to talk about Rust and why we chose Rust for Mercurial, because we just said that we have like 40,000 lines of C code in Mercurial, so why switch to Rust? Why move? So most of you know what Rust is and why it's pretty good, so I'll keep this short. Basically, it has a better signal-to-noise ratio for us. You have fewer lines that are completely orthogonal to what you're trying to do, and you get in focus on actually making the algorithm that you need to fix the issue. The compile time guarantees are interesting for VCS. Cargo and the formatting and the testing framework, all very nice. And the save by default aspect is very reassuring. But I think that's no news for any of you. So I'm going to skip right into the performance aspect. So there was an experiment by Valentin Gatien-Baron, who's a developer at Jane Street. And he built a very small subset of the status command in pure Rust. So it's not complete. It does just a little bit of what status does, but it was good enough for their purposes. And as you can see, the performance is just miles better from the reference Python and C implementation. So that sparked a lot of interest in the community. And although the plan to introduce Rust within Mercurial was already put in place maybe a year before that, it really was about around this time that we really started to put it to use and to really dig into it. So there are many different ways of connecting Python and Rust together. I'm not going to go into detail as to why exactly we chose Rust CPython. It compiles on Rust stable. All right, that's it. There you go. It's composed of two crates, the first one being a very low-level crate that just binds to the CPython ABI and does all of the tedious work that you really don't want to be doing by hand, and a higher-level crate that is more functional in the sense of exposing a module to Python that just looks like a Python module from Rust, creating classes, functions, that kind of stuff. You have an eval function, which is pretty useful sometimes. So that gives the following structure. So for people who are not using CPython, I'm sorry, but there you go. Pure Python code, of course, talks to its backend. The C extensions also talk to CPython. But from the Rust side, we chose just before I came into the project, this structure was chosen of using two separate crates. So this one, HJCore, is a self-contained Mercurial library with no idea whatsoever that there's a Python somewhere. The idea is to have it self-contained and that it should work on its own. And AGC Python is one of the crates that we have, which is like way more developed than the others because it's the more common one, but it's one of the possible crates that you could have to bridge the Python code and the Rust, pure Rust code. So I was very excited to start working on this because, you get paid to write Rust, so that's super cool, and open source Rust. But it was not super convincing at first. The first non-trivial program that I tried to write was about twice as slow as the reference implementation, even though it was written in Rust, and I was pretty sad. And this is due to a couple of factors. The main one being friction in general. If you're trying to bridge two languages together, you always have friction at the FFI layer. You have a border within the two languages and you have to interface them. They don't work the same way, especially Python and Rust have like very different ways of handling memory and thinking about ownership and that kind of stuff. So you pay two prices. You pay the cognitive price, the developer price, I could say, of the complex interface code that you have to write that is basically not, it feels useless because you know that you're just trying to exchange data and that's it, but you have to still write a lot of code to do this. And it's not the main thing that you're trying to do, but you still have to do it. It's an engineering constraint and it's what you have to do. But it's complex and so it takes away some of your budget to have to think about all of those things. And the fact of the matter is, exchanging data in general is costly. Just having to allocate memory at all, moving memory around, looping on objects, and just in general, having the GIL, for example, you cannot do those things in parallel because Python has the GIL. So if you're trying to create an object in Python, you can do some of the stuff outside of the GIL. But in the at the end of the day, if you're trying to communicate with Python, you still have to have the GIL. So global interpreter lock. So for some people who don't know. So I have an example. On my laptop, if I try to stat 100,000 files in Rust in parallel with hot kernel caches, I get about 30 milliseconds of wall time, which is pretty cool. And then I try to give those results to the Python layer in any meaningful way, and I get an order of magnitude more on top of what I was trying to do, completely negating the usefulness of doing it in Rust in the first place. So that's you know, pretty frustrating. So we have many possible solutions. One of them is to communicate with C directly, with the C layer. There's a thing in the Python standard library called capsules that allow you to share like an API of function pointers between C extensions, and you can just target the C ABI with Rust and use capsules to communicate with the C layer of Python directly, which is pretty cool. You can exchange less data. So in general, move up an abstraction layer and maybe give the file name instead of the file contents and that kind of stuff. And in general, just do more in Rust. Okay. But to move up those abstraction layers, you need support for features for those abstractions. So in Rust CPython, we had a few missing features that were quite important. First one of them was just a set. In Python, a set is a very useful collection. That appears in a lot in the Mercurial code base, and there was just no way of interacting or creating a set from Rust at that time, so that's what we had to do that. Supports for capsules, so that just made like a PyCapsule macro that would allow you to get and create a capsule. And then a few more hairy ones. First one being inheritance for classes written in Rust. So you have a PyClass macro in Rust CPython that allows you to create a Python class backed by Rust collections or data in general. And that's pretty cool, but if your Python code then tries to inherit from your Rust-backed class, it will just crash and say, no, it's not a valid base type. You cannot inherit from this. And the reason is that the feature was not added. Because what happens if you forget to call the initializer? What happens if you inherit and you just don't call super? Like what happens to the memory? It's a complicated program because either you have some very strong runtime invariance or you just don't do it so that the what was chosen was to just not do it. So you have to use composition over inheritance, which sounds good in theory, but in practice it's just writing a lot of boilerplate code that adds an indirection. And that method calls in Python are pretty expensive. So if you're trying to shave off milliseconds, that's not really helping. So that's one of the issues that we have. Properties and the set adder, so giving instance attributes to instances of class, so they could have attributes and properties. It's a very common pattern in Python. So if you're trying to have a dropping replacement, you just like change a class. You can't, because there is no support yet for properties. And the last one, I want to talk a bit more about it because I figured it's more interesting, and it has to do with the terrible joke in the presentation title. Being iterators on Rust collections. And what that means is you have any Rust collection, for example, a vector, to take a simple one, and you want to share a reference to that object with Python and Rust at the same time to allow for a lower memory overhead, better performance, and just in general not moving the entire object through the FFI layer at once. So what that means is that a Python iterator in Rust should behave the same way as a Python iterator would, which means that it has different rules about what you can and cannot do at runtime. So if you're trying to mutate mutate an iterator, so calling next on a Python iterator, if you already have a reference to it, is valid as long as you don't try to read the reference after that. If you then try to read from the iterator, it will get a runtime error and just said that something moved between the iterations or anything. This is different from what Rust does, because Rust would just not allow to have those two references, one mutable, one immutable, at the same time in the first place at compile time. So you have to use something called generational poisoning, which is just basically keeping a counter of which reference we were part of. Like, so every older reference gets invalidated if you're moving something. So that's one of the ways that you can do it. Of course, you have to tell the Rust compiler that it really has to let go of the memory, because it's you're trying to push memory and to share it with something that it has no control over, which is like really not good in Rust terms, which is basically sharing the reference between the two languages. So there was a proof of concept by my colleague George over here in June of last year. That was upstreamed, that I upstreamed about a month later for a small but non-trivial data structure in Rust. And since then, it has been upstreamed by another Mercurial contributor in Rust CPython. So it's something that you can use if you try to bridge the two languages. You can use this system that we've put into place. And it relies on a lifetime extension trick. So it means that you take in a lifetime and you just say, this is static, it's fine, everything is okay. And then you have, it's unsafe, of course. It is FFI, it is unsafe, but the invariant to have it not actually unsafe is pretty easy to uphold. The only thing that you don't have, that you have to think about is to not move the reference out of the borrow scope, which is like you don't have to do any manual dropping, any something very complicated. You just have to not move it out of the scope, which is reasonably easy to do in the context that we're working on, because you have like a Py class, so it's pretty hard to move things out of it. I just said it uses generational poisoning. So we did some upstream work, as I said. The Py set has been upstream last year, so has the capsule support. This iterator thing, is more general than just iterators. It's technically any shareable data. I actually still have an issue with a Python class that I want to expose multiple parts of as separate Python classes. And that's just super, there's a ton of boilerplate involved if you're trying to do it, because you have to always go through the same indirection layer. So maybe that can help. I still have to try. Properties that are being worked on, so that's going to happen. So that's our target. That's what we're trying to achieve, but it is the unrealistic target, because it does not do what